I was online with AJ just now trying to figure out basically if that jackass down in Oregon was anybody we knew, and apparently that first bit of internet buzz might have something to it. For one thing, they have not released the name of the shooter after 6 hours, which generally takes about two. And in the second place, it seems that when he was going from classroom to classroom, he was asking those kids what their religion was, and if they said Christian, he shot them in the head, and if they said something else or responded in some non-Christian way, he either shot them in the leg or didn't shoot them at all. And now they're claiming that the guy was 20 years old, not 28, so that bit of internet drivel that Salon came up with may not have anything to do with it at all. So it could be that first... Okay, here we go. Hey, you're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
You're speaking with Christian from down east in North Carolina.
Hey, how's it going down there, Christian? You mentioned you'd be calling.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. It's rainy. It looks like we got a Cat 4 right about to hit.
By the way, did you call just a little while ago?
No, I was actually holding off on calling until I got the chance.
Okay, we got a call from somebody who called too early. We got a message, I mean.
Hey, you're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
On the road again.
Okay, is this Trucker?
Yep.
Okay, let's see if we can get you into the call here. And we now have the Trucker, and we got Christian from North Carolina. Trucker, are you in the homeland, or are you on the road?
Oh, down here in Arkansas.
Call that on the road.
Bill Clinton country. Yeah. Christian, where in North Carolina again are you? You said down east, but whereabouts down east?
I'm right around near Parker's Island, as you can tell from my slightly thick brogue.
We used to spend a lot of vacations down on the Outer Banks, down near Salter Path, places like that.
Oh, yeah, most of my kin's down Salter Path.
Well, our topic for the evening, gentlemen, is going to be third world immigration. And having been duly scolded for dominating the conversation, so forth and so on, I'm going to try and let you guys talk. Hopefully we'll get more callers this time around. Christian, how is illegal third world immigration, well, third world immigration period, how is it affecting that part of North Carolina where you live?
Well, it ain't quite as bad as it were a couple of years ago. Most of them seem to have cleared out or stayed near the little housing project, but the school, West Carter, is the main school.
Hang on just a minute, Christian. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
This is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse. Are you back in Mississippi? You still up in Illinois?
I'm in Missouri at the moment.
Okay. Oh, we got two truckers here. Let me see if we can add you to the call here. Okay, we now have two truckers out of the three guys on here. Our own trucker is in Arkansas, and Jesse, who is originally from Mississippi, but he's in Missouri right now. Jesse, we're talking about third world illegal immigration and how it's affecting people. Christian from North Carolina is a third man on a call right at the moment.
And also legal third world immigration.
Any third world immigration. So, Christian, go ahead.
The high school around here is about near being overrun. There's still a fair amount of white students, but now it's mostly damn niggers and fucking, pardon my French, y'all, I'm so sorry. As Harold knows, I'm in the military. It's a bit of a hard thing to bust. The high school around here has been absolutely overrun with MUDs and blacks, and we've even got a couple Hindu families down here now. And it's just getting absolutely miserable. I feel so bad for the white students because they can't learn. They're so busy trying to avoid getting the shit beat out of them. They ain't learning right. It was the same way when I was in high school, when I was in the marching band, and you couldn't hardly hear the instruments playing for all the damn logs and all that, fucking and shouting and all that good nonsense. It is just gotten absolutely terrible, at least in high school.
That's one thing I remember. About integrated classrooms in high school, the niggers simply would not shut up. Got another caller. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
This is Richard. I'm in Virginia.
We will see if we can get you into the call here. You'll be number four. Okay, we now have four callers. We've got two truckers who are on the road, our own and Jesse. And we've got Christian from North Carolina. And now we've got Richard from Virginia. Christian, go ahead. You were talking about third world immigration.
Most of it's down in high school is where you notice the issue. The public sector around here is still majority white for the most part, except for a couple of niggers here and there. Because all the damn Mexicans and the rest of the Hispanics who are up here are living on the damn welfare. They're in government housing. Every job I've had, it's been majority white or mixed half and half. My first job, I was working at a place called Cat and Bill's Little Seafood Restaurant. All of the cooks were black, every single one of them. Everyone else, the wait staff, the owners, all that was white. You could hear the cooks out in the main part of the restaurant because of how damn loud they were. They just would not shut up. And the owners kept going, and they're day after day, hey, we need y'all to be quiet. We got customers
got
in here.
Got another call they coming said, in. You're on Radio in Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
This is Terry in Florida. Harold, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Let's see if we can get you into the call here. You'll be number five. Okay, we got five guys now, and our newcomer is Terry from Florida, and we're listening to Christian from down east North Carolina talking about third world immigration in his area.
You go in there and you give them your order, and the food would never be ready, ever. It would take 45 minutes for a damn flounder to get out, and you'd go down to sanitary just down the way, and you'd have flounder ready in 15 minutes. And it's just because all they was doing was talking. They would not work. They wouldn't do anything worthwhile. It was terrible. And the place is shut down now because of that very reason.
I think it's been pretty well proven that the only way you can actually get any work out of niggers is with a bullwhip. That's why they flog them during the slave days. Anything else you can think of as to how third world immigration is affecting your daily life down there in down east North Carolina?
Aside from having to avoid certain parts of town very, very often because you'd hear gunshots, and we haven't had murder down here in 10 years. Actually, I wanted to bring that up. Our last murder was done to a coal burner and her grandmama that she and her damn black boyfriend was fucking living with, and he turned around and killed them because they wouldn't give him drug money. That was our last murder. That was 10 years ago. There had been 10 years before that one since we'd had another murder, and that one was done by a nigger. Just a lot of bullshit. I mean, really. I like to think of this as my little white haven because I can go down a solder path and it's nice. Everything's white, clean. Everything's done up well. Come back over to the bigger parts of the county, it's just terrible. The crime's all thieving and drugs. It's just horrible.
Well, you know, we have a solution for that, Christian. It's called Northwest Homecoming.
Northwest Migration, damn straight. Now, if I can get out from underneath my military contract, I'd be up there as soon as possible. But I suppose I have a misplaced sense of honor in wanting to keep that contract going for a country that I know don't exist no more.
Jesse in Missouri.
Yes, sir.
How's your immigration situation in the great Magnolia state of Mississippi? Explain to the other guys that's where you're from. I know you said you were in a truck and you were in Missouri, but you're from Mississippi.
Yeah. A lot more Mexicans getting to come to Mississippi here lately. I was up in North Dakota for a year and a half.
Yeah, I believe so. You're up there in the fracking fields.
Yeah. The company I was with up there has started getting the kick of bringing in Nigerians. They're going out of their way to find Nigerians. But that's them for the new Mexicans.
Now, which is worse, the Somalians or the Nigerians?
I've never had an actual personal experience with Somalians. I heard about them, but I ain't ever had any interaction with any myself.
You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
This is Joe in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Joe, let me see if we can get you into the call here. You'll be number six. Okay, we got six callers now. We've got Joe in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Jesse from Mississippi was talking about some of his experiences with third world immigration. Jesse, you mean to tell me now they're bringing in Nigerians to work in the North Dakota?
Over in North Dakota, yeah. Well, there's a lot of Nigerians in America already. A lot of the companies are looking for them.
I mean, it's not as if there's any Americans that need jobs.
No, perish the thought.
Yeah, that's insane. Terry in Florida, I imagine you've got some third world immigration stories to tell since Florida is basically part of the third world now.
Yes, it certainly is. The fact of the matter is I'd like to address this notion that there is work that Americans won't do. We all know that when that is said that way, they're talking about there's work that white people want to. And that's utter bullshit. I come from a part of the country down in the southeast where you can ask somebody where they're from and if they say Gaston County, Florida, the response is, I didn't know there was anything there but gnats and niggers. Well, I'm a gnat. But at the same time, I'm 60 years old and I've grown up in a very agricultural area where those jobs that white people won't do are supposed to exist. I'll never forget as a kid riding down the road and looking over in the fields at the ones working out there harvesting and prepping and bringing in the foodstuffs, and they were all whites and in some cases blacks mixed in. We don't need third world laborers to do labor. We do plenty of that on our own. I know people right now that are destitute. They don't have a job, can't get a job. They don't have the skill set to go out there and compete in the techno world. But they can sure as hell drive tractors. They can sure as hell work on the farm and do the things that have been done for generations and generations. The concept that we have work that Americans won't do is utter bullshit. It's part of the propaganda to replace us with another population.
That's absolutely true, and as a retired engineer, I can tell you that the H-1B visas, which was for technically educated people to fill jobs that there were not Americans available to fill, was a lie from the very beginning.
From the very beginning. As a matter of fact, I'm self-employed. I am the most self-employed type. The company consists of me only. A part of my function is that I serve my clients in their pre-employment processing for our new employees. And I have seen it literally with my own eyes where a company would make the decision, well, we cannot get good attendance, we can't get good production out of niggers, we can't get white people to come in here and work for us. So they have an actual agenda to target and recruit Latinos, I'm sorry, Hispanics. to come to work, because literally, and I'm serious about this, your average Latino will work a hole in a nigger. A nigger is not psychologically able to accept the discipline of a job. They work best, as has been said earlier, under the whip. At best, they're antiquated farm equipment. An employer that needs to get production out, if he can't get white people to come in for whatever reason, they're going to hire the Latinos. And that works toward us being a replaced population.
Well, that's just the first generation of Hispanic immigrants. Your Guatemalans and Mexicans and Hondurans and whatnot who just got across the border. A lot of them will work very hard. I will concede that. The problem comes with the next generation.
Well, they're
what you got is East L.A. gangbangers.
Yeah, another problem is when they bring the rest of their family, like their aunts, uncles, mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, and a lot of those are on welfare.
A lot of it also doesn't apply to the recent wave of immigration. You know, all those children that were supposedly coming across last summer? A lot of them were like MS-13 gang members. And hang on a minute, we got another call. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
This is Paul Hoskins from West Virginia.
Yeah, Paul. Hang on a minute. Let's see if we can get you into the call here. Okay, now we got Paul from West Virginia. Paul, we've got guys here who are talking about their personal experiences with illegal immigration in their lives and in their areas.
We're also making some observations which aren't really personal experiences, but are observations that we have made during the course of recent years.
Terry from Florida, do you have anything else to add?
I'd just like to sum it up with that if we allow ourselves to become a replaced population, those who will not fight to survive do not deserve to survive. We need to find a way, and I think there's a certain gentleman that's known as the Prince of Darkness that has outlined a method in several novels by which that we might actually approach our liberation and our sustenance and continuation as a people. The fact of the matter is, and I want to address this completely outside the parameters of the current discussion, all of y'all that are going to listen into this, if you are not financing this operation in the Northwest through the Northwest Front, Northwest Publishing, or whatnot, then go hide in a closet in shame. You can afford to do without a six-pack once a week. You can afford to send in $120 here, $120 there. Just because the minimum is $10 doesn't excuse you for not sending in anything. And when I look at what's going on with the project out there, it sickens me because I know that there is a lot of people that listen into this that sit there with their thumb up their ass and they don't do anything to contribute to the survival of their race. And if people are going to take this seriously, if they're going to bother to tune in more than two times, they ought to send money because we got to have money to make a difference.
Right.
And I will yield the floor to the next person.
I think the next caller was Richard from Virginia. Richard, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, and I'd like to pick up on the last comment about financing the Northwest Front. A lot of us are damaged in our lifestyle, personally, within families, by the immigration and the niggers chimping out whenever they want.
By the way, guys, That comment about chipping in reminded me that I hadn't given Harold my monthly dues, so I just handed it to him. Just so you know, you're having an impact.
It's already working.
Let me talk some more. Maybe I'll get you some more money.
Yeah. Okay.
But what I was thinking is, and one of the things that peeves me is about we're told everything that's wrong with this country, and we don't fight, and we don't stand up. One thing you can do, and it feels good, you know what the problem is, and here's an organization or a movement that's trying to do something, contribute. It feels good because you're at least doing something. If you can't take old Betsy out of the attic and straighten things out, but what you can do is donate so somebody else maybe can do something when you can't. So that's the way I look at it. You give and you support because it's the first step. In that respect, and then you were talking about the immigration, how it affects you.
And we got another caller. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with, please?
You're speaking to Christian in North Carolina again. I'm sorry, y'all. I had to drop out to take another call.
All right. Let me put you back in. Okay, that was Christian in North Carolina. He had to drop out for a bit, but he's back. Now, go ahead, Richard.
So they're around you causing problems, but I liked what you said, Harold, one time. And this is in my life that I haven't been exposed personally to them that much. But when you can hear them and you can see them, and God forbid you can smell them, because I have worked in all black areas, and I'm telling you, it's like another world for me because I was raised in the country. So, yeah, they do affect us, and they are affecting people. Just because you're not exposed to it because of where you live, don't ignore the problem. It's there. One day you have to face it. Another point, Don mentioned the H-1B visas. One of the candidates that run in Rubio is pushing a bill to increase 3 times the number of H-1B visas. Another thing that was said, that white people just won't do some jobs. Well, that's bull, because when the money's right, they'll do it. Well, when you got an immigrant that's not paying taxes and is getting subsidized by welfare and Section 8 housing, they'll do it for a little bit less. So that's why the white person won't do it, because you can't support yourself on it. So that's why those jobs go unanswered, and that's not the reason to bring immigrants in, because you don't pay enough for the jobs to keep white people on it. Another point came across about how the immigrants have affected us, and especially the blacks and their lack of a good work ethic. I can remember years ago, there was a Ford plant in New York. I lived near the New York State border, and I can't remember the name of the town, but there was a big Ford plant up there. And I knew some people that worked in it. And they shut the plant down because of the blacks, because they had to hire so many blacks, because New York's got a lot of blacks, and because it's a liberal state, a lot of free handouts. So you've got Albany, and you've got Wappinger Falls and that area. So the pressure was on Ford to hire more blacks. Well, because they're stoned on drugs half the time, they don't come in on Monday. The production was so bad, they shut the whole plant down and moved it down south. So they're doing a lot of damage.
I believe the next gentleman up was Joe from Tulsa. I believe you were next in line. How's the immigration situation out there in Oklahoma?
I'm a painting contractor, and my dad was a painter. Most of the guys I know aren't even in the business anymore. It's almost totally illegal alien now. Nobody that's a builder builds anything anymore. All they do is subcontract everything out, and the only thing they give a shit about is how cheap you'll do it. That's the only question a builder ever has asked me in the last 10 years. How cheap will you do it? Obviously, quality's not really too important to them, so they all hire illegals. They've basically taken over everything in construction. It's driven wages down to where I can't really keep people working full-time. A lot of time I just have to do it myself because I can't afford to hire. I won't hire illegals. Just can't stand the idea of doing that. I go into the paint store, and I've noticed that now they cater to them. And what pisses me off,
signs in Spanish,
I'll see
and everything.
Illegal in there driving a hell of a lot nicer truck than I'm driving. And they've all got accounts. They've all got stuff. I went, how the hell do they do that? They get perks I don't get. And it's like they're trying to drive us out. You know,
their presence is encouraged by the people in authority. What you have to understand, and it's the key to understanding this whole immigration issue has been for the longest time, that both parties want them here. The Republicans want them as cheap labor for their corporate cronies and for their business buddies. And when they can't get the cheap labor to come here, they'll ship the jobs out of the country to where the cheap labor is. They don't care about anything to do with the country or the people or principles of the Constitution or the law or anything like that. All they care about is their money. And the Democrats want them here as Democratic voters to eventually fulfill their ambition of having this country be a one-party Democratic state. As the election in 2016 gets nearer, I think, there is going to be a big hoo-ha about Republican-run states desperately trying to bring in things like voter ID so that somebody, before they vote, can actually prove that they have a right to vote, little simple things like that. And the Democrats are going to fight tooth and nail, so they get their hordes of illegals and beaners, probably many of whom don't even speak enough English to understand the ballot. And all they know is, yeah, you put it lever, say D. That's the crux of it. That and the fact that there has never been any serious attempt to punish the employers. The whole illegal thing could have been cleared up years ago if they just start cracking down, just say, look, don't hire them. But any states and localities that have tried to do so have been prevented from doing so by the federal government. And hell, look at what the federal government did to Arizona when they tried to enforce immigration law. Go ahead, Joe.
It's directly impacted me. I've got beaners living next door to me. Got about 8 or 9 kids. I've got a beaner that lives across the street from me, one house over, who I've never seen him doing anything other than making his wife pregnant. He's got about 5 toddlers running around. I don't know how many people are living in that damn house. There's a family of niggers that live across the street where nobody works, and they all get a check. I'm thinking, I'm the only son of a bitch around here that's actually going out and doing it right. I'm kind of getting punished for it, it feels like.
Yeah.
I'm fed up. I'm ready to get the hell out of here.
We've got a place for you to come, Joe. Just one quick interjection here. I'm reminded of many years ago after I had my transient ischemic attacks, I was trying to get on the Washington State version of Medicaid, and I was rejected because I made all of $80 per year too much money. There's this little black girl behind the counter when I was talking to her, and she didn't mean this in any offensive way at all. It was just a remark that she let slip. But she said, well, really, Mr. Covington, men in your demographic aren't supposed to be accessing these benefits. You're supposed to be paying for them. I took no offense at all because the girl was just telling me the truth. I mean, not that I didn't know, but I appreciated her honesty. But no, that's the attitude. Our purpose in life, guys, is to pay for all this.
Yeah,
shut up,
because we're the evil people that are causing all the trouble and everything and have ruined all these people's lives by whatever, being white people, I guess. I'm sick of that, and I'm sick of that story, too.
I think next up will be Paul from West Virginia. How's the illegal immigration situation up there in them West Virginia hills?
Well, I don't suffer like some of these. I'm really from Florida. I came here to a state to tell things. So it isn't so bad here, although the people here are very naive, and girls who are usually sensible will marry a Mexican and have his baby, and then he goes back to Mexico, and there she is with no job, and he sends her asking for money, which she doesn't have. And the people treat them here the same way as I've already heard mentioned, with a kind of preferential treatment. And I'm from Florida, and they have sanctuary cities there. Sanford is one. Leon Springs, maybe even many others I don't know about. Well, this is illegal, unlawful as could be. What I've discovered over the years, didn't have a television or a computer. I got letters from people called the American for Immigration Control. That was John Benson and Bob Goldsboro, and very good writers. And I discovered after the years they couldn't do anything, that this is a conspiracy. It isn't immigration anyway. This is an invasion to replace...
Absolutely.
That's a good point.
To replace white people. I knew a young girl from Germany. She was married with a family, and she was given a limited visa, but she could never become an American citizen. And that's the same for other Europeans. They want to use that to destroy the idea of American sovereignty. The police here in West Virginia, they are taking jobs here. They come from North Carolina, where there is an organization there that sends them all over the country, I think. Send them here to take jobs that they can work less. I don't see a political solution, although there are those who entertain that illusion. I think the only thing is to have a last readout or a conclave of people or something to say what you can, because we have been betrayed.
It's interesting you talk about North Carolina sending Mexicans up to West Virginia. I remember back in the day in the 70s and the 80s, North Carolina was well known as a destination for employment, because the economy was very good at that time in North Carolina, what with the Research Triangle Park and everything. for white men from West Virginia because the economy in West Virginia was so rotten. And yeah, it was like almost like a traffic jam every Monday morning and every Friday night or so up and down the interstate. West Virginians going down to work in North Carolina for a week and staying in a motel or whatever and going back to West Virginia on Friday nights. Interesting that that situation seems to be reversed.
If we're sending Mexicans up to West Virginia now, as soon as I head west, I sure as hell can't tell.
Trucker, we haven't heard from you. I know in your RFN segments you've made your opinion of illegal immigration clear, but do you have any updates for us from your perspective on the gorgeous mosaic we live in?
I've heard stories, I haven't seen it, about some of the trucks that third worlders like the sheethead, whatever nationality they happen to be. I've heard stories about them from mechanics and from DOT stories about them cutting holes in the floorboards of brand new trucks, and they go on shit piss on out the holes going down the road. The mechanics find all the refuse underneath the truck and they refuse to work on them, and DOT just puts them out of service.
That's one way to avoid pit stops, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You'll have two or three of them leased in a truck running down the road, and they just go and switch out drivers. And what I've been told is just keep the truck rolling. You'll have about three of them hot bunking it going down the road. They don't bother stopping. They just go and do their business out the hole they cut the floor.
I recall from your RFN segment when you talked about the fact that there are Arabs in California.
Oh, yeah.
Large numbers of them.
Yeah, Fresno, Stan. In other words, Fresno. I mean, there was one truck stop. That's all they were, was filled full of sheetheads.
On a slightly different brief digression here, and I don't want to get too much into it because we still don't have all the facts, but it is possible that we got a lovely little dose of third world immigration here in Oregon this morning. I'm sure most of you will have heard of this mass shooting we had at the little college down in Roseburg, or community college. It's really weird. Just before we came out here, I was with a friend. We were on a computer, and we were trying to figure out what had been going on. This was like 6 hours after it happened. They still had not released the name or any details at all about the shooter. There was all kinds of conflicting reports. At first, they said he'd been arrested. Now they've decided that he was dead, I guess. But some interesting things are coming up. Like, the first thing the police did when they sent in heavily armed SWAT teams was go from classroom to classroom and up and down the halls confiscating the students' cell phones. They actually have kind of sealed up that whole crime scene, but still stuff is coming out. And it appears that this individual went into the school with some kind of weapon this morning, and he went from classroom to classroom, and he asked the students what religion they were. And if they said Christian, he shot them through the head. And if they said something else, I'm not quite sure what that would be, but if they said something else, then he would either shoot them in the leg or not shoot them at all. Before I came out here to do the program, I spent a lot of time running around on the internet just trying to find out what the hell had happened, because I'm a little bit concerned that we might have had another Dylan Roof here, and all of a sudden I might be the shadowy white supremacist who inspired some idiot. So I was trying to find out what was going on, and I just noticed hour after hour just absolutely no information. Have you guys heard anything by way of an ID on this lunatic with a gun down here in Oregon, and anything that might indicate his motive?
No, I've been doing the same thing as you, is searching all over the internet, and I ain't even found, you know, what ethnicity it would be. I ain't found nothing along them lines. All I've heard is that it was a male,
yep.
And that's about it. And because of that, I'm thinking that maybe it's one of the protected classes that don't
don't
really want to show them all.
I put out an email notice saying, hey, guys, if you guys hear anything, let me know. And this one comrade of ours said he got something off what he called an ISIS Twitter. And I have no idea what an ISIS Twitter is, saying that it might be ISIS connected. At first, I was a little bit skeptical because I said, well, it just sounds like our typical paranoid internet BS. But if this guy was asking these students what religion they were before he killed them, that might be some kind of Muslim terrorism right there. So I don't want to get into this too much on this program because the whole thing might be totally untrue and we may have to just remove this whole section from the finished product because it's off base. But I'm just curious if we might have a little ironic counterpoint here, and those poor kids down in Oregon may have gotten a little dose of third world immigration this morning.
Yeah, one of the news stories that I saw referenced that some gal was tweeting out. And I went, clicked on the link, and her account was shut down. It didn't show any tweets at all. Somebody put a cork in that one.
Apparently, the police I don't know if this is some kind of weird standard operating procedure they've come up with for these incidents, but apparently the first thing they did just about, presumably after making sure the students were safe, is say, hand over your cell phone.
Harold, I do that comment on that. One is, dead men tell no tales. They shot and killed a guy. I would have wanted to keep him alive to find out what's going on. And the other thing is, when they take the cell phones, they control everything outgoing. They're controlling the situation and what gets out.
I did watch a live CNN feed for a while, and CNN was talking to students and whatnot, obviously on a cell phone, but there was always from students that were outside the perimeter of the sealed-off area, so obviously these kids must have gotten hold of somebody else's phone, or I believe there was a local reporter from Roseburg who was letting them use his phone, something like that. As you know, I am not really, really too big on conspiracy theory, but I have to admit this one looks a little funny right now. I'll be interested to see what kind of official story they do come up with. We probably shouldn't talk too much about that since the whole thing may turn out to be off the wall. But I just thought I'd mention that third world immigration is not just a nuisance, it's not just socially destructive. These people kill. And even if this thing this morning was not an actual act of Muslim terrorism, how many tens of thousands of Americans have been murdered by these invaders in various ways? Drunk drivers, rapists, killers of various kinds, like that girl in San Francisco who was murdered by some guy that had been deported four times or whatever it was. Immigration is a life and death matter, put it that way.
In more ways than one, yeah. Too. It's not just the direct killing. It's the complete displacement of our people in many ways. Economically, demographically, politically. It's a complete full-court press, and we are being pushed out. Mm-hmm. And we, at some point, reasonably soon, need to do something about it.
It's immigration, illegal immigration, but it's really war. We're at war, not with guns and tanks. They're storming us, and we're defenseless. But just to go back for a moment to the story about the shooting in Washington, it gets everybody's attention. And the big story of the day, in my opinion, is the fact that Russia is stepping in Syria, and I don't hear hardly anything about it. This is big news in my book.
The reason you're not hearing much about it is because they are successfully forcing the United States to back off. And that's embarrassing, and they don't want to broadcast that.
Yeah, there's also a lot of information coming out. Listen to Putin's speech before the UN. He'll tell you what ISIS is all about from his point of view. You're right. The United States is put into a position like, who are you defending here? What are you doing? You're supposed to be taking ISIS out, and what are you doing? You're actually, through John McCain and some other spooks, you're going in there and you're actually helping them. And I don't think they want to talk about it because the United States government's up to their neck in it and there's no way to squirm out, so I think they're being a little quiet.
Yes, Israel's in it as well. In fact, you could probably say that Israel is the prime controller and the United States is its puppet, but both Israel and the United States are funding, directing, and so forth.
I noticed Bibi was in front of the United Nations General Assembly this morning ranting and raving about how Israel will not allow Iran to do this or do that or do the other thing. I think it was funny as hell, Putin getting up there in this press conference or whatever it was and saying, we are going to send our air force and we're going to smash ISIS from the air. And he sends out his air force and they proceed to pound the hell out of the American CIA mercenaries instead.
Another little blurb that I heard, there was some activity with China. China was doing some kind of support with Russia.
Oh, China is sending two things militarily. One is they're sending an aircraft carrier and a destroyer, and wherever there's an aircraft carrier, there is at least one or two submarines to the waters off Syria. And the other thing they're doing is they say that they are sending ground troops.
You'd think that would be on the nightly news, and it's not. And still we have the shooting.
Nope.
I have noticed that these shooting things tend to happen at very convenient junctures when a distraction is needed. I'm sure I've babbled about this in my Grandpa Simpson-like fashion before, but there's an old movie from the 70s called Telephone, whereby the Soviet Union has planted sleeper agents into the United States for years, and they get activated and sent off on missions to go blow things up and kill people by an evil Russian, in this case Donald Pleasence, calling them up and reading a few lines from a poem by Robert Frost, telling them they have miles to go before they sleep. I always figured that people like Arthur Bremer and John Hinckley probably got a call from somewhere telling them that they had miles to go before they sleep. Some of these things are just too convenient.
Another thing, these perpetrators of these horrific events, you don't hear too much about them after they catch them. Like, what's their medical history? Have they been in trouble before? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to suspect there's some kind of control over them.
A lot of them, you'll notice, actually shoot themselves through the head as the police close in, so there's no trial. Now, they caught that one idiot who thought he was the Joker and shut up the Batman movie, and he got tried. I think he's in the death penalty phase of his trial now. Maybe that's concluded. I don't know. And they've got that dumbass kid, Dylan Roof. I've noticed a lot of these guys, when they finish their little hissy fit, they just have no plan of escape. They just get in their car and start driving aimlessly until the highway patrol pulls them over. And then they surrender like little lambs, which again is odd. If you know you're looking at multiple murder counts and you're going to get the poison needle, you'd think you'd at least make an escape plan or maybe even resist when the man comes to take you away to death. But that never seems to happen. They all seem to act in the same strange zombie-like way, but then maybe that's me indulging in conspiracy theories.
Well, there's another aspect to this, and that is, I think you touched on it briefly, that they are taking psychiatric drugs, SSRIs mostly, but sometimes other things, and these have, in fact, a black box warning on them saying that they can cause suicide and other violent behavior. And so many of them, overwhelmingly, these people are on those types of drugs, which supports one of two explanations. One is this is a side effect of what the pharmaceutical industry is doing to us. And the other one is, as Harold was talking about, it could be a controlled operation of the U.S. government, the Israelis, whoever, basically manipulating these people psychiatrically.
Let me pose a hypothetical situation. You mentioned the SSRIs and Chantix. The stop smoking pill that you take. Well, part of the warning is you get suicidal tendencies. Now, I read a book, I can't remember the title, but it was by a Dr. Kaufman, and it was on these SSRIs. And the most dangerous part about them is not so much when you take them, when you get off them. So you could take a personality that's suffering from depression. He might hate himself and hate his life. So you get him on these antidepressant drugs, these SSRIs, and for some reason, his body develops an immunity or he loses them or whatever. The guy gets off the drugs, and it's been proven that when they come off them, that's when they really go berserk, and he kills himself. Well, how about a guy that hates people? He's got it in for his supervisor. He's got it in for his teacher, his fellow students, and he's on SSRIs. And his psychiatrist or somebody slips him a placebo, or he stops taking his medication. Well, that guy's a ticking time bomb, and he's already programmed. Maybe that's how this is done. I don't know. It's only hypothetical.
I just have difficulty wrapping my mind around the idea that anyone would take a drug that has a warning message on the bottle, warning may cause suicide. Why would anyone put that in their mouth at all?
Aren't you kind of doing that when you're trying to quit smoking? I mean, when smoking's kind of a form of
suicide
anyway.
Yeah, and there's also the fact, and I'm not kidding about this, how many people read anymore? I think people are reading less and less, and reading the little pamphlet that comes with the drugs that you take is something people also are doing less and less.
It's real well if the doctor prescribed it, it must be all right. And well, I took one of those, that made me feel pretty good. I think I'll take three or four more. That's the type of stupid thing people do.
About all the TV advertising for medications now. They're practically pushing drugs that a doctor has to write you a prescription for. Why do they need to even put that on television?
Oh, they want people to ask their doctor for the drug.
There you go.
And of course, if the doctor has been loaded up with samples, and if he's getting a kickback from the pharmaceutical company for every prescription he writes, yeah, well, let you trial, you know, bugger all or whatever, and never mind whether it's needed. A lot of these doctors are basically in like Flint with the pharmaceutical companies. It's just a racket. My opinion as I get older of organized medicine isn't high.
I think it's basically the illegal drug trade. It's just they got a license to do it.
Yeah, in fact, the legal drug trade is doing more damage to the U.S. population than the illegal drug trade, and that's saying something.
How many kids these days are loaded up with Ritalin from age 6 and these various drugs they get? Basically, to try and control their natural behavior in a lot of cases. Can't have young white boys running around on the playground yelling and screaming and pushing each other and throwing rocks at each other and throwing rocks at the girls they like and this sort of stuff and pulling little girls' pigtails and being sexually aggressive like that.
Pharmaceutical emasculation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You guys can laugh, but I tell you, The average sperm count of white males has dropped over the decades, and I think it's largely because of the general toxic environment we live in, but also it's entirely possible that a lot of it's because of all these junk prescription drugs we take.
Yes. Harold, you might find this interesting when you said cocktail of medications. I have a brother, and he was taking blood pressure medication and something for his liver and about three or four different things. And he was also developed diabetes, and he was taking insulin injections and taking the insulin pills, but they would make him sick. So anyway, long story short, he was up to here with the doctors. He said, I'm just going to take my blood pressure medication to hell with everything else, and I don't want to be bothered with this. So threw the pills away, and guess what? No longer diabetic. Coincidence? I don't know, but they do damage to your body. There's side effects to everything.
Well, you can tell we're a bunch of senior citizens here. We're sitting here talking about our doctors and our medication. We may have to get rid of a lot of this in the finished product. Getting back to third world immigration, we got six callers on. Whoever wants the floor to tell their personal...
Can I say something,
sure.
Harold?
Yeah, sure.
Joe in Tulsa, my dad was a painter, and I went to work with him when I was a kid, and he died in 1972. And back then, he was making $3.50 an hour.
And we've got another call. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with? Okay, and we've got Lord Lucan in as well. Lord Lucan, we are talking about illegal immigration, and Joe from Tulsa was talking about, okay.
When I was a kid, I was working with my dad. He was making $3.50 an hour as a painter, and he died in 1972. But gas was like 25 cents a gallon. Basically, he was making about $35 an hour in today's money. And he worked for another contract. And all those guys made basically around three. He made a little more. He was foreman guy, so he made a little more money. But he had enough money to have health insurance that he paid for himself. We had a new car. We had a nice little house. My mom didn't have to work. And the stuff that we built, those houses are still standing and still livable. To me, it works a lot better, even if you have to pay three times as much for stuff if you got a good job.
Well, that's another bad effect of illegal immigration is that craftsmanship and skills, as someone else was saying earlier, no longer matter. It's just how cheap can you get it done.
And this race to the bottom in terms of employment wages is, one, it's by design, but another thing that's going on is the collapsing economy is driving it, and there's tremendous pressure to push costs down so that people can afford to buy your products. If your products cost too much, you go out of business because no one can afford to buy them. So this is going on as a result of our collapsing economy, which of course is caused by the so-called Federal Reserve, which is a private consortium of international private banks, which is basically owned by the Rothschilds. So that's where it all flows down from.
About to say, don't forget the guy at the very top is a damn kite.
Right.
Lord Lucan, have you gotten any input for us on illegal immigration?
Or legal immigration.
Or legal immigration.
Just third world immigration any sort.
Well, it's a basic problem. The primary reason I think back to England when they started with immigrants from other parts of the Commonwealth was to destroy the trade unions because the solidarity was more or less racial. Mm-hmm. All the people in the union were the same race, and that helped to bond them together. When you have people of different races, they will cross a picket line. That's what I think the whole start of this whole thing came about. And you will have people of these different places that won't support trade unionism at all, like especially Islam. And that's what broke the solidarity of the union, and it's the same in America. They want to destroy the standard living of the white man and make all the money for their bosses. That's what it seems to me to be the whole story.
You're old enough to remember Enoch Powell, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I remember him. He was a rebel, though. It was the Conservative Party that wanted to bring in the immigrants. And I got replaced by an immigrant in my job. And I had to come to America to get a job. And so I ended up in America.
Wow.
Because I was working in a factory in England for Hawkpoint. And the way I saw it, my primary reason for bringing in the immigrants was to destroy the trade unions, to destroy the standard of living that was enjoyed at the time. Now it's got to the point where the left have abandoned the working class and they're just following along with whatever they're being told by the other side. And if you don't, and if you oppose all these scabs, which is what they are, you get called a racist, which isn't really true. if you support the solidarity of the trade unions and the refusal to cross the picket line, or if you're opposing the scabs to come in, then you're a racist. And they don't seem to understand that, okay, that's the way it is. That's how they've destroyed the trade unions, as I see it.
Back in the 1920s, especially in 1922, they had some bad strikes and whatnot on the Rand in South Africa among the mine workers and various skilled workers, mechanics, carpenters, etc., all of the little ancillary trades that had to help the mines keep going. But they were white unions, and the main bone of contention was that the mine owners, i.e. the Jews, were bringing in Kaffirs and coloreds and Indians and all kinds of strange non-white things and trying to put them into skilled jobs and, in essence, trying to break the white skilled craft unions, break the wages and that sort of stuff. And so the white trade unionists in the mines actually fought back, and it got pretty bloody there for a while. I think the South African government and what was then the Union of South Africa had to call in troops for a while because there was a lot of shooting and burning and ass-whooping going on both sides. But eventually the white unions won out, and up until the time when I lived there in the 70s, blacks were completely frozen out of the trade unions. It was one of the bad signs as when the South African trade unions began to allow in blacks and non-whites, at first a few tokens, and then eventually, of course, what happened was the ANC and the communists took over the unions and started going on strike, and they were part of the destruction of South Africa. There was a time, and this country as well, when the trade union movement was very pro-white, and a part of their function was to prevent competition from cheap non-white and third world labor.
And there shouldn't be anything wrong with that.
Going off of something that Lord Lucan said, where just opposing an idea would get you called racist, I'm at the age, a lot of my friends are just now going off to college, and a fair portion of them now are in these sociology courses. And I've been called a racist just, and don't get me wrong, I mean, by definition, I am a racist, but I've been called a racist for saying you shouldn't be ashamed to be who you are. It's getting to the point now where I've actually been looked at and told that I did not have the right to speak because I was white, and I was speaking on a non-white issue. It's getting ridiculous. A girl that I was on cross country with has gone off to a major college in North Carolina. She's on their student government and whatnot. She has recently published an anti-male, not just anti-white, but anti-male article where she was talking about how because the student president was a male, he got to make all the calls on when certain things would happen. And I thought there would be common sense that, hey, he's the damn president. Of course he gets to make the call on when y'all have meetings and whatnot. But no, it's getting to the point where if you're not the one in charge, you're automatically oppressed. And if the person in charge is a man or if he's white...
Okay, we got another call here, gentlemen. You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
This is Greg from Buffalo. I'll be danged. I got through.
All right. Hang on just a minute. Okay, we got Greg from Buffalo with us. We were talking about third world immigration, Greg, and then things got off onto weird medical and Muslim topics and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's weird. We got a strait here they call the Niagara River. Connects Ontario with Erie, and we get plenty of generally Chinamen coming over from Canada. And where I go fishing on the strait that is called the river, there's a ton of feds there, immigration people in their green and white SUVs. It's kind of funny. They're always popping them, and unfortunately, a lot of them drown.
It used to be that the main immigration problem in this country was on the southern border, on the Rio Grande, and the Canadian border was just sleepy and quiet. When I was growing up, whoever heard of illegal aliens coming in through Canada? Now I understand the Canadian border is just as bad for it as the Mexican border, almost. Probably worse because there's more of it.
I have friends down in Colorado, and they say, the beaners are just pouring in there. I said, come on. But he said, yeah. They have a border patrol in their green and white SUVs. But it's funny. We got an international rail bridge, and they tried to slip over. The dang thing's got sensors every 6 feet. Not very successful. But it doesn't dissuade them.
Then again, they keep on trying. I think a lot of them probably don't care if they get caught, as long as they can get across the border, either north or south, because if they get across the border, they know that they'll be taken to a detention center And they'll basically get three hots and a flop there for 4, 5, 6 months, however long it takes, to have some immigration judge hear their case. And then they'll probably be turned loose on their own recognizance and told, okay, we want you to show up in court again another 4 months from now. Now, you will do that. Oh, yo, see, Your Honor, I come back. I come back, sure. And, of course, that's the last they ever see of him, and that's how a lot of them get in. It's not like they slip the border. They come in and they get caught, and they are actually released once they're apprehended. And then they disappear into the Mexican or Somali community or whatever.
You can find every ethnic, racial background in here, around this neck of the woods. I worked in an auto plant, and a guy who was a young man went into a border patrol. Now, they sent him up on the St. Lawrence River there, and then up the North Country and around Maine, too. I don't know what the stats are, Mr. Covington.
I saw an article a while back, and they were talking to some Border Patrol agent who was like a senior supervisor, and he had all the statistics at his command. He says, in the year 2013, they apprehended illegal aliens of 135 nationalities going across the southern border. They were having a problem with a lot of Arabs, and Muslims were sneaking in, and I forget exactly how he worded this, but the fact is that if you're not really an expert in ethnographics, Mexicans and Arabs can look an awful lot alike, and they'll learn a few words of Spanish, and they pass as Mexicans.
The other thing is that we have quite a number of colleges, universities, and a lot of these folks come in on student visas and get a taste of America, or America. And don't you know, they stick around. They don't hottail it back to the homeland.
I can understand, in a sense, why most of these third world types would not want to go back. I've lived in Africa myself. I've visited a few other places, of which the absolute worst hell on earth was Port-au-Prince, Haiti. If I had for my sins to be dumped down in any kind of black-ruled nation, I would prefer anywhere in Africa to Haiti. I see why these people want to come here. I wouldn't want to live in some of these hellholes either, but the fact is, screw them. This is our country. We have a duty to our own people, our own land, our own heritage, our own posterity, our own families. This is ours. We are not under some moral obligation to hand everything we have over to these foreigners who basically come in waving their little begging bowls saying, gimme, 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 gimme. If you want what we got, you stay in your own country and you overthrow General Bungi Bungi or whoever your dictator is, and you create a free enterprise society, and you stop eating each other, and you acquire certain civilized tactics. And of course, it would help
if you're
genetically able to assimilate a Western education. But even then.
But you forget the hidden hand at work here. Yeah. Now, I looked at the stats, and Washington and Oregon, they're very white states. I thought Maine and Vermont, but I was wrong.
Well, no, they're putting Somalis there now.
Now, how did that come about? Who fobbed or foisted on the Somalis?
The United States government did it.
And I have to admit, I have a certain amount of sympathy for some Somali goat herder who gets dragged out of Mogadishu and then has to go through a Maine winter. Or a Minnesota winter. They've got them in Minnesota now. God, those poor bastards. Those niggers are going to freeze to death. They'll be chocolate popsicles.
We had one. These are very primitive people. Put an aluminum container in the microwave.
They have no idea what it is. They probably have no idea what an electric oven is. I know that Somalis and the tribesmen from the Horn of Africa, so-called, are primitive even by African standards of what's called Nilotic people. They're virtually just barely one cut above the Stone Age.
To reiterate my answer to your question earlier, who's behind this, who's doing it? The United States government specifically sent the Somalis to the state of Maine. And I assume that was the State Department and the immigration people working together. But it was definitely the federal government of the United States that did it. And in some cases, Catholic charities and Lutheran charities are involved in settling these blacks and browns, but mostly blacks from Africa, into white communities in the United States. And again, the whitest communities are in the northern parts of the United States, the Northeast, Northwest.
Well, that's why we're getting 5,000 Syrians here. And sometimes if you ask these federal bureaucrats why they're doing this, they'll actually give you an honest answer. They'll say that, well, Iowa or Idaho or Maine or wherever they're going to send these wogs, you're too white. You have to have diversity. Why? Because we say so. And also, sometimes with this particular regime, they'll be honest and they'll say, we're going to break up Republican voting districts. They've discovered that they don't really have to lie anymore because they know that no one's going to do anything about whatever the hell they decide to do to us. It's revolting. It's nauseating.
This chap mentioned about Catholic and Lutheran charities back in 80 to support people. It was kind of, well, touching. They brought in a bunch of Vietnamese. Well, don't you know, the niggers and the beaners went nuts because these folks were putting their puss in the pie, and the niggers and the beaners said, whoa, this is ours. I'll give these gooks credit. Within 3 years, they were out of public housing and off of the public dole. And how they did it was starting landscape companies, janitorial companies, restaurants, laundries. So it can be done with our muds. There is work out there, and I've thought about, now that I'm retired, I thought, geez, maybe I ought to do something. Window washing, stuff like that. I'm one of those poor peckerwoods that define myself through my work. Now that I'm retired, I have to redefine myself.
Greg, on another topic altogether, you were the last one to come in. Have you heard anything on the news as to whether or not they have identified not just the name, but the race and ethnicity of this guy that went berserk with a gun down here in Oregon this morning? Or are they still concealing his identity?
I was in a meeting, and I listened to the radio, and it was just the usual drivel that I had heard at 5 o'clock.
This is getting strange. If they haven't done it now, it's been about 8 hours since the shooting, and if they still haven't identified him or his motive, and like I was telling these guys earlier, apparently this guy, according to some eyewitness account from some student who was able to get a hold of the cell phone after the police confiscated hers or whatever, this guy went from class to class and went up to the students and asked them what their religion was. If they said Christian, he shot them in the head, and if they didn't or if they denied they were Christian or whatever, he either shot them in the leg or didn't shoot them. And the last buzz I got was from one of our guys saying that there was some kind of ISIS connection, so it might be an act of Muslim terrorism. At first I thought this was internet BS, but to me the fact that they're not revealing anything is interesting.
The only thing I heard was that he had two domiciles, one by campus and one further out.
Okay.
I'm on a smartphone, and I'll have a check here real quick and see if they put anything else out.
We may have to take this out of the podcast if it's wrong, but I'm just curious. I'm just curious as to why they're not.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, okay.
You mentioned the Tuscarora Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the Five Nation tribes here in western New York, they're at the bottom of the pole. Nobody ever hears them. The Senecas run all the casinos here on, interestingly enough, Tuscarora property. Well, they're the original timber niggers.
Well,
and I'm surprised
actually,
that you mentioned them.
The Tuscarora were run out of North Carolina in 1712. We had a Tuscarora War, and I didn't know this myself until recently. Apparently, they didn't stop running until they got all the way to New York, but I thought we'd actually exterminated them. They were actually a North Carolina tribe originally, and they got chased out in 1712. I remember that from my 8th grade North Carolina state history. This was back in the days when they actually taught a state's history in school.
They covered it pretty much in 7th grade. We got New York state history.
Lloyd Lucan said that he had lost his job to an immigrant. I sent an email over to you about what Disney is doing. Anybody taking Disney vacations better reconsider it. It's pretty horrendous what they're doing. They're driving their good workers out to replace them with foreign workers. And if they don't cooperate and teach them their jobs, they're losing their severance pay.
This is what gets me over the past few years. All of these things are getting so blatant because they've discovered that they can do it and they can kick anybody they want in the teeth. And it's not just the federal government. It's the big corporations. Of course, you know, Disney also is in like Flint with Obama and the Democrats and the regime. They're among the top list of Obama's so-called crony capitalists, so that doesn't surprise me.
And you might want to share that with some of the members. Maybe Lloyd Lucan would get a little solace from it. It's, don't take it personal. They're doing it to everybody.
Oh, no, they're doing it to the entire Western world. Europe is now being invaded physically by Muslims because they figured out that they can. They figured out that they can actually cut through the wire and get into Hungary or march and march and march across Europe in search of the great welfare states in Germany and Sweden, etc. And they figured out that the Europeans, who are once the greatest and most fearsome soldiers in the world, will not fight them.
And the reason for that is because the Jews have wormed their way into every position of influence where they could possibly be stopped. So that's why the government and related mechanisms in European society are not stopping them.
And they were discussing that Somalis going to Maine, one of the callers, I don't remember his name, said that they wouldn't send them into Mexican areas or black areas. Well, I think that's exactly why they send them in the white areas. Who else would accept them? I don't know whether you've seen it, but I've seen it. The illegals and brown-skinned people, they come into a white area, and everybody rushes up to greet them, the white people. I don't know what's wrong with them. Well, so that's why maybe they send them into all white areas, because we're the only ones.
I don't know. I've heard in Los Angeles and a few other cities where there is enough of a Somali population for them to basically start ganging up for mutual protection. And in places like Los Angeles, where the whites have more or less fled, other than the very wealthy enclaves, they've kind of run out of white people to leech off of, and they have to live next to the Mexicans and the American niggers and so forth. And there is now a bad racial problem. Or I suppose you might call it an intra-racial problem in the Los Angeles schools, kind of three-way between the Mexican kids or Hispanic kids, and I presume you have subsets of those like El Salvadorians or whatever, and the American niggers and the Somalis. There are problems now with Somali and nigger gang wars in Los Angeles high schools when they've got two sets of niggers carving each other up.
Harold, you mean since the white people have left, there's still interracial problems there? And the bad white people have gone?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Mexicans and niggers do not like each other. The Mexicans have almost pushed the niggers out of Compton. I will say this for Mexicans. Mexicans and niggers are like sharks and dolphins. They won't swim in the same waters. And when the Mexicans come in, as obnoxious as they may be, the fact is the niggers leave. Because basically the niggers know they can't mau-mau them, they can't threaten them, they can't bully them.
And the ones who don't know, who end up fighting them, end up getting killed.
Yeah.
It's very clear. You ask the police, well, the sheriff of Los Angeles County said that the Latinos control the jails. I don't mean as legal officers. I mean as
the gangs.
As the gangs, the most powerful gangs. They control everything. And out in the streets, it's the Latinos versus the niggers. And the niggers are losing because the Latinos are smarter than the blacks are. And they actually go into a fight with them with a plan, not just doing it spontaneously.
Yeah.
And the niggers do it spontaneously and then get their asses kicked.
Basically, when you mix the races, it's just like almost any hybrid. When you mix the races of mankind, what you generally get is the worst aspects of both races. When you mix an Indian and a white, which is what a mestizo is, what you get is a smart Indian. Also, with the Indians or the Asiatics, complete lack of any compassion. Mexicans are not as smart as white people, but they are smarter than blacks. And also, Mexicans have one big advantage that whites don't. They lack this compassion or this moral governor that has been installed in the brains of white people by the Jews that prevents them from raising their hand with a weapon in it, either in self-defense or any other way, against a man with a dark skin. White people have just been conditioned from birth. No, no, you must not physically fight or resist a non-white of any kind. But Mexicans don't have that. Niggers know when they mess with a Mexican, that Mexican's going to rip their guts out with a switchblade or he's going to kill them in some way. And so they leave them alone, and when Mexicans come into an area in any number, the niggers leave because they know they're outclassed. So that's about the one good thing I have to say about Mexicans. We've got about 2 more minutes left. Is there any wind-up comments that anyone wants to make on the immigration issue or anything else?
I just read on the internet that the guy that was doing the killing, they say he's 26 years old, named
Mercer. I looked up a picture of him.
Harper Mercer.
Mercer?
Yeah, Mercer. M-E-R-C-E-R.
Okay.
I've looked up a picture of him, and he looks to be a mixed race between a white and a nigger.
Okay, so he's a mulatto?
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
If he's a mulatto, he might actually still be a Muslim.
Yeah, as far as I understand it, I see that the gunman asked the people to state their religion before shooting them. So it seems to be Muslim.
It might be what they call ISIS influence. Remember a few months ago, a couple of niggers attacked something down in Arizona, or they attacked the Draw Muhammad cartoon contest, something like that, and the cops shot him. Could be this guy's not actually an ISIS Arab from Iraq or anything, but he's influenced by their websites and that sort of stuff. We'll see. But that actually is kind of a relief that he's a mulatto. So that way, at least, I can't be accused once again of being the shadowy white supremacist that inspired him and get my books canceled for publication and all this horse manure. All right, guys, it's 6:30, and thank you all for calling.
Well, thank you for having this opportunity, Carol. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Signing off. Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And
as a closing remark, can I ask anybody who wants to speak, to say and tell us what topic or topics he'd like us to have as the theme for future editions of this show.
Oh, hell.
What can we do?
We try to avoid religion.
Let's avoid religion.
Anybody.
I'd like to talk about some solutions to what we can do to save ourselves.
Well, we have the solution. I talk about the solution every week on Radio Free Northwest.
I know, but I'm a new guy.
For young fellows like me, we could bounce back and forth on how people can get into learning trades that'll be useful if and when the time comes, and it will come.
What kind of trades do we need? Yeah.
Well, like me, I'm getting ready to go to a trade school to learn diesel technology. And we're going to need people who know how to work on weapons. I'm in the military. I know how to work on weapons. We need people who know how to work on engines and whatnot, keep things running. I suggest that we bounce around the question, what do you think people my age could study and could learn and could get their hands on to make them more useful when the time comes around?
Somewhat similar to the survivalism issue we had at one stage. Okay, guys. Thanks a lot, and this program should be up probably sometime next week, and you'll be able to hear yourselves on the internet radio. Thanks again for calling, and you guys have a great night.
Yeah, good night, Harold. Right,
okay.
Good night.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night.
Good night, John Boy.
All right, take it easy.
You too.
Okay, this is Stop. And
one more left.
One more. Oh, well.